Perhaps one thing common across most mothers around the world is the concern that they have about their children. No mother wants to see their children suffer, and no mother wants to see their children waste their lives. Godly mothers, regardless of religion, want their children to be the kind of people that will please their God or gods. They want their children to find salvation, however that may be in each belief system. Most mothers try to raise their children to the best of their knowledge and ability in ways that will maximize their children's ability to be productive to society, and for godly mothers, for their children to have a good afterlife. In our children's story, we heard the opening bits of the story of Manoah, his wife, and their promised child, Samson. From all we have to go by in the Bible, in Judges chapter 13, we learn that Manoah's wife was a devout and godly woman. This was a highly unusual thing during the time of the Judges, when most of Israel had turned to the gods and the religious practices and the lifestyle of the surrounding nations. Here was a woman, and it seems to a lesser degree, a husband, who were still believers in and followers of Yahweh, the God of Israel, the true God of all men and women in the world. Even though the Bible does not explicitly state so, I believe we can be confident that Manoah's wife did follow all the instructions given to her about how she was to live while she was pregnant with Samson and how to raise up Samson to be the chosen deliverer for Israel. And we read in the last verses of chapter 13 that the Lord blessed Samson as he grew up, and the Spirit of the Lord began to stir him. What we learn here is that God was with Samson from the very beginning. But as we go into chapter 14, we learn that Samson had other ideas. He really wasn't that interested in delivering Israel, his people, from the Philistines. It appears that he saw the Philistines as having more fun, having a better life, better looking girls, and better parties. Archaeological records regarding the Philistines indicate to us that in many ways, perhaps in most ways, this was certainly the case. There was much in Philistine culture that would appeal to the sensual desires of the human nature. This brings us to our first point this morning. Just because a person is raised in a godly home with all the spiritual advantages it brings does not make a person immune to the siren call of those things that are truly evil in the world. Just because a person is dedicated to the Lord, even baptized as a Christian, and even with the Spirit of God working, does not make him or her immune to succumbing to the temptations that the world has to offer. So mothers and fathers, if you have children that don't appear to be walking with God as you might want them to, it doesn't mean you've failed. Your job was, and still is, to show your children what a walk with God looks like, and to show what it does in your own life. If you've been doing that, then you're doing all that's asked of you. Our second point is that God gives every person, including your children, freedom to choose for themselves who they'll serve and how they'll go about it. And so, mothers, you have to allow that, however painful it may be. Control and force are never God's methods, and they shouldn't have a place in your toolkit either. Pray for them. Model a godly life, but don't force. Don't threaten. And in regards to this point, I refer to the exchange between Manoah and the angel in chapter 13 of Judges, verses 12 through 14. Manoah asks the angel, what kind of rules should govern the boy's life and work? The angel doesn't answer this question. He only repeats by reiterating what Manoah's wife is to do, what the angel had already told her in person. From this, I infer that we can influence our children towards good by our own actions. We have control over what we do, over the choices we make. But the rules that a child chooses to apply to and to govern his or her own life is up to each person to choose. So again, mothers, the best that you can do is to model a life that recommends your God to your children. And if you've done that, you're successful. Our third point this morning is that God's purposes for each person are theirs alone. Manoah, as we just read, tried to get out of God how he would work through their child, but God didn't answer that question. Like Manoah, mothers and fathers today may want to know how God is going to use their child. And so by knowing, we might hope to give them a greater advantage. But God typically doesn't satisfy our curiosities. If God had told Manoah and his wife how things were really going to turn out, would they have believed him? It would have looked terribly depressing to them. They may have tried to change the course of history. Mothers, just as God allows each person to choose their future, you too need to allow your children to choose their futures. God sees where our choices ultimately lead, including the bad ones that are made, but he allows them to unfold. He might intervene with warnings and signs, but the choice is still theirs, and theirs alone. Likewise, mothers, as much as you might want to drive life for your children, you have to allow them their choices. You can provide warnings, you can provide signs, but leave the driving to your children. From the stories that we have of Samson, we can learn a few things about him. We know that he was supernaturally endowed with physical strength. That was also likely his downfall, that he began to believe that his strength was natural rather than from God. We know that he had problems controlling his impulses. He had problems controlling his temper. If he saw something he wanted it now. He was easily swayed by emotions. And we know he had a tendency to reveal information inappropriately. Many times, when we've heard sermons on the story of Samson or read stories about it, the fall of Samson is attributed solely to his weaknesses for women. But as I read through and thought about this story again, I believe that it was really a combination of all of his weaknesses coming together. The final nail in the coffin, though, so to speak, appears to have been his move away from God. As a person dedicated to God through a Nazarite vow, in addition to not having his haircut, he was supposed to have kept away from all grape products, all forbidden foods, and to have kept himself ceremonially clean at all times. But the only one that he appeared to have maintained through his lifetime was the restriction regarding his hair. I get the sense that Samson may have looked upon his hair as some sort of lucky charm, a mystical symbol of the presence of God. And as long as he had the hair, he believed that God was with him. As long as Samson believed that God was with him, he tacitly acknowledged his need for God to strengthen him. And as long as Samson acknowledged that God was the one who strengthened him, God was able to work through and past all of his weaknesses to bring about divine purposes. But on that fateful day, when Samson revealed to Delilah the source of his strength, God says God left him. Was God in the hair? No, but the hair was a symbol and reminder of God's presence in Samson. Now, Samson had to have known that Delilah would have his hair cut off and that the Philistines would come to take him. Yet, he still revealed the secret. Samson's reaction to the Philistines arriving betrays what I believe happened to him. When the Philistines arrived, we read in chapter 16, verse 20, that Samson thought, "I will do as before and shake myself free." Somewhere along the way, Samson's trust turned from God to himself. That was his downfall. However weak Samson's trust in God may have been, as long as it was there, God was able to work through him. But as soon as Samson's trust moved completely over to himself, when the belief that I can take care of myself took complete hold, God could not do anything more for Samson. Now I imagine Samson's mother must have been wondering on many occasions how someone like Samson could be the result of their child rearing. I imagine many of the choices Samson made and the things he did were incomprehensible to his parents. Mothers, have there been times when your children have done things that made no sense to you? Perhaps against the very things they were taught? Guess what? It happens to even the best families. It's not your fault. And guess what? It'll probably continue to happen. And it's still not your fault. That brings us to our fourth point this morning. God can work through people and circumstances of their doing. However wrong it may appear to us, if the person has even a minuscule amount of trust in God, God allows natural consequences to come about, but he uses the consequences to further his purposes. In the case of Samson, God's purpose was to show that he was supreme. He, God, was supreme, the God of Israel, the sovereign God over all the other gods that were being worshipped at the time. And despite Samson's foolishness, the Israelites and the Philistines did see firsthand which God was the powerful God. Now, in the cases of our own children, we probably don't know what God's purposes are for them. Since we don't really know our children's hearts, nor do we know God's purposes for each of them, we can't know with certainty from outward appearances how God is working in and through them. We just have to trust that God is still at work. And that brings us to our fifth and final point. The eternal destiny of a person is determined by his heart relationship to God. It is not determined by a person's actions. When we examine the life of Samson, as recorded in Judges, it really doesn't look very promising for his eternal destiny. He seemed to live from one impulse to another, from one emotion to the next. And there are two recorded instances of Samson praying to God. The first one sounds almost like a toddler's tantrum, demanding that God is obliged to miraculously provide water for him because of all the wonderful work he's been doing. The second prayer is the one that sounds nearly hopeless, right before he brings down the temple of Dagon, down upon the Philistines and upon himself. Looking at Samson's externals, it appears pretty hopeless. His end, from all appearances, was a case of revenge suicide. It appears to be an act of a hopeless, desperate man. A number of Bible commentators try to make the case that this wasn't really an act of suicide. They try to explain how it doesn't look, they try to explain how it doesn't look like, smell like, or taste like suicide. I don't know. When I read the story, it sure seems like one. Samson's last recorded words don't exude hope, really, whatsoever. It reads pretty much like a suicide note. It sounds like the last words of an angry and bitter man. Yet towards the end of the Bible, in the book of Hebrews, chapter 11, verse 32, we find Samson listed as one of the heroes of faith, alongside Gideon, Barak, Jephthah, David, and Samuel. How could that be? We might wonder. Didn't Samson waste his life? Didn't he essentially kill himself? And my answer, just looking at the outward appearances of Samson's life, is yes. But actions, however final, don't determine a person's eternal destiny. The only thing that matters to God in regards to whether or not a person is saved has to do with his or her heart. Did he or she trust me? Is the question God asks of each person. If the answer is yes, then God is able to save. So I imagine Samson's last thoughts, not recorded, might have been something like this. Lord God, my life has brought shame upon your name. I cannot go on living, for if I do, it will continue to bring shame upon your name. So let me die today with the Philistines, and whether in life or death, I will trust that you will keep me safe. Mothers, do you have children or perhaps even grandchildren that you worry about? Ones that may have disappointed you. Ones that seem to be wasting their lives and from appearances seem to be headed in the wrong direction. When all of your suggestions and warnings are not heeded, when your best examples seem to fall short of desired expectations, know that you still have a God who cares for them even more than you do. So continue in prayer for them and trust and believe that God is still working on their hearts. Pray for your children's hearts to be turned towards God. God is still working. He desires that everyone be saved. Mothers, it's fine to be concerned about your children's heart and its relationship to God. Worrying about your children, however, though perhaps a natural tendency, I think is perhaps not so okay. It might lead you to try to take the place of God in their lives. Rather, pray for their hearts to come to God and to stay with Him. God calls upon every one of us to cast our anxieties upon Him, and that includes any child-related anxieties. Mothers, don't base your value or worth on your children and how they turn out. Many children turn out fine despite their mothers' and fathers' mistakes. Others, though, end up in less than desirable lives despite all the advantages and good upbringing. So don't take too much credit if you have great children, nor become overly proud. But do thank and praise God that His grace and power were sufficient. On the other hand, don't feel like a failure if your children haven't met your expectations. Mothers, even if you don't always approve your children's lives and decisions, make sure you love, appreciate, and support them. Manoah and his wife didn't approve Samson's desires to marry a Philistine girl, but they still went with him to Timnah to support him and to fulfill cultural obligations surrounding the marriage. For mothers and grandmothers who have children and grandchildren that are of particular concern because they appear to be off course, the story of Samson is one of hope and promise. Samson is listed among the heroes of faith, not for his physical deeds, however great and God-inspired they may have been, but rather because at the end of his life, he chose to trust God with his life and with his death. Samson never seemed to outgrow his childish versus childlike faith. But that was enough. And that's enough for your children too. Most of all, mothers, trust God with your children. Trust His love. Trust God's love for them. Give them over to Him. And work with God to help their hearts respond positively to His heart.